Today at Reader's Corner, Imbolo Mbwe, author of the new novel, How Beautiful We Were. I'm Bob Custer. Welcome to Reader's Corner. On today's program, novelist Imbolo Mbwe joins us to talk about her novel, How Beautiful We Were. We should have known the end was near. So begins Imbolo Mbwe's powerful second novel. Set in the fictional African village of Kasawa, it tells of a people living in fear amid environmental degradation wrought by an American oil company. Pipeline spills have rendered farmlands infertile. Children are dying from drinking toxic water. Promises of cleanup and financial reparations to the villagers are made and then ignored. The country's government, led by a brazen dictator, exists only to serve its own interests. Left with few choices, the people of Kasawa decide to fight back. Imbolo Mbwe is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Behold the Dreamers, which won the Penn Faulkner Award for Fiction, among other honors. The novel has been translated into 11 languages, adapted into an opera and a stage play, and optioned for a movie. Imbolo Mbwe, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Thank you so much for having me, Bo.
And as we were just saying, Imbolo, we had a chance to run across each other at the Sun Valley Writers Conference in 2017 when you were there to talk about your book, Behold the Dreamers. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity then to read that book, loved it, and was just so delighted when I heard you've come out with How Beautiful We Were. But let's go back a little bit because I want our listeners to know your story, so to speak. I understand that Oprah Winfrey and Toni Morrison played a role in sitting you down to write. I think that's the way you put it when it comes to Behold the Dreamers. I think it was a Falls Church library, Falls Church, Virginia.
Yeah,
tell us about that.
Falls Church is a town in Virginia. And right after college, I was living in Virginia, and I went to a public library because I am very big on public libraries. And when I came here, I was like very excited. I am from Cameroon and I didn't grow up around public libraries. So every time I moved in America, I made sure that I had a library card. And I went to this one library in Falls Church, Virginia. And the moment I walked in, there was a shelf that had Oprah Book Club picks, and I'd never read any of Oprah's book club selection. So I decided to try one, and the one that caught my eye was Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon. So I borrowed it and I took it back home. And the moment I finished reading that book, I just started writing. And I suppose the book was just very powerful. And I am hardly the only writer who was inspired to start writing after reading that book. Mm-hmm. There's something about it that really, if you have any kind of genetic, disposition to writing, I think that book definitely brings it out.
Right, right. So tell us what happens when your phone rings one day and it's Oprah herself.
This is my last book, which Oprah selected for her book club. And I was told by members of her staff that somebody was going to call me. And then I got a call from her, and she had read Behold the Dreamers, and I told her, I said, actually, this is interesting. You're calling me because I started writing because of a book that you have selected, Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon, and she didn't know that. So she was pretty surprised to know that she had selected a book that inspired me to write, and then she was calling me later to tell me that she had selected my book as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, again, the name of the book is Behold the Dreamers, but we're here today to talk about your newest book, How Beautiful We Were, which I thoroughly enjoyed in so many different ways. And I suppose we could begin with your helping us understand how you come to write a book like this. I think it has a lot to do with storytelling. This is a beautiful story. And you may not have grown up around public libraries, but I understand you did grow up around lots of storytelling.
I grew up around storytelling. I think the storytelling that certainly shaped me a lot, which I didn't realize it then because I was just growing up around it, but it had to be the Bible because I had a fairly religious upbringing. And I grew up in church and I grew up reading lots of stories in the Bible. And I think that without realizing it, the kind of storytelling that the Bible is about, thinking about the Old Testament and the New Testament and lots of stories of wars and betrayal and marriages and so many different, you know, issues about the human condition. I think that was something that stayed with me. And in this particular novel, How Beautiful We Were, I think that I leaned a lot on this sort of the biblical tradition of storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to your childhood years in Cameroon when you followed the fight against Royal Dutch Shell. Ken Saro, is that Wiwa? Is that the way you pronounce it?
Ken Saro Wiwa, yes.
Yeah. Obviously, this is a case in Nigeria, a particular locale in Nigeria where Royal Dutch Shell was working, extracting oil, destroying land, killing children and adults. How did that form for you the basis for this book?
So the case you're referring to is what happened when European oil company discovered, was mostly European oil company, at least my understanding, he had been extracting oil and it had caused a lot of pollution. And there was a movement to put an end to that pollution. And the leader of that movement, it was a man named Ken Saro Wiwa, and he was fighting really hard to get his oil companies to stop destroying his ancestral land. And so growing up, we didn't really have a television, at least at the time this was happening. We didn't have a TV. We had a radio at home. And I did not know anything about environmental movement. I had never heard of an environmentalist. I didn't even know there was such a thing as an environmentalist. But this story of this man leading this movement to fight against this oil company was on the news all the time. So I remember rushing back home, you know, after school to listen to the radio to get the latest on what was happening with this environmental justice movement. And then one day, the government of Nigeria, they found some kind of charges to use to put him in prison. And that caused a big global outcry because, you know, people around the world were very upset that this environmentalist was simply demanding the right to live in a clean environment, demanding the right for his people to live in a clean environment. But the Nigerian government at the time and the Shell Oil Company, they couldn't care less. So they put him in prison. And one day I came back home from school and I listened to the video and I found out that he had been executed. And that was a big moment for me because I remember feeling very, very disappointed that somebody who was merely asking for a very basic human right. He wasn't asking for anything like outrageous. He was just asking for the right of his people to live in an environment where that is not covered with toxic spills and all these conditions that make life difficult. And he was just asking for the basic right of living in a clean environment, and he was killed along with several of his followers. And so that moment certainly shaped my thinking on justice and inequality and also power, which this novel is very much about power. And so that stayed with me. I can't say I thought about environmental justice much after I left Cameroon. So a few years after that happened, I came to America to go to college. But at the back of my mind, I kept on thinking about environmental justice and living in America for all these years as well. I came to understand that these things are happening not only in Africa, they're happening all over the world. And I learned stories of environmental degradation caused by different reasons. It's happening in America, it's happening in Asia and South America. And so I drew inspirations from all over the world to write this story about people fighting for the right to live in a clean environment.
Well, of course, your book is a novel. And I have friends, for example, who are turned off by novels or fiction and tell me they want to learn from nonfiction.
Right.
And yet, is there anything in this novel that has not happened in some similar form in many African nations visited by exploiters and invaders?
Right. Happened again while the village is set in Africa. I was very much inspired by events happening in America as well. So it might seem as if this is an African issue, but environmental degradation and pollution is happening in America. It's happening all over the world. And I have lived in America for most of my life at this point. So I looked at the BP oil spill. I looked at you know, what is happening in Parkersburg, West Virginia. Those are all issues of environmental degradation. And so this was a very heavily researched novel, because not only did I look at issues of environmental injustice, I also looked at social movements, and I drew inspiration from some of the greatest revolutionaries of the 20th century. I looked at what it takes. What does it take for a small community to fight a powerful company? What does it take for a group of people who don't have resources to try to bring a multinational to justice? So I looked at all of that, and I used lot of the research that I found to create the characters.
Well, it's certainly impressive to see how you've put this novel together, and I've read that this wasn't an overnight assignment. In fact, this book, How Beautiful We Were, predates, in at least your brain and your writing ability, predates Behold the Dreamers. This is something, 20 years or more in the making?
Yes, I started writing it in 2002, and it didn't come out in 2021. So from when I started writing it to when it came out, it was a 19-year journey. But of course, I didn't write it for 19 years. There were years when I didn't write a word in it. And then in the middle of writing it, I got the inspiration to write a very different sort of story. Right? My first novel is set in New York City. It has to do with two families wrestling with the American dream during the financial crisis of 2008-2009. So in the midst of writing this novel, I put it aside to write Behold the Dreamers. And then after Behold the Dreamers came out, I knew that I had to go back and finish it. So that is why it took me so many years. But I hope my next novel doesn't take me like 100 years to finish again.
You're listening to Imbolo Mbwe. She's the author of How Beautiful We Were. Well, let's talk about Thula, the protagonist of your novel. In a way, she seems to be another version of Nigerian activist Ken Saro Wiwa. Who is Thula, and what is she up against?
Yeah, so Thula is a young girl growing up in this village that has been very, very polluted. And she sees her friends dying around her. She sees how much the whole community is struggling. And as a child, she's very indignant. She's very, very angry that enough is being done to protect the children in her village, including her. And her father tries to do something, and it doesn't exactly work out well. So she grows up determined to lead a movement to bring this oil company to justice. And the story is mostly told from the point of view of Tula's friends. You know, in the novel, we refer to them as age mates. These are the group of children who were all born in the same year. And so they speak in a chorus, and they tell of what it's like growing up in this village. And they also talk about the struggle which got started by their parents, and what became of the struggle, and also how they took over the struggle, and how the whole thing ended. So it is it's a story that goes across various generations. It has to do with Tula and her friends, and it also has to do with Tula's grandmother and Tula's mother and Tula's uncle. And it really is about the toll that the fight for justice takes on the lives of people, not only individuals, but the community as a whole.
In your novel, the reader is reminded that European snatchers, as you call them, came to Africa, not just to enslave people and send them to America, but also to force them into labor on rubber plantations because of the need for rubber in Europe. I guess I really never thought much about that latter point you're making. We all, of course, know the history of slavery and its legacy, but the rubber plantations is another thing. How did you manage to come up with that?
Well, that was inspired by a wonderful, wonderful book and a writer who I got to meet at Sun Valley also. The writer Adam Hochschild, he's a historian. He wrote a book called King Leopold's Ghost.
Yes.
And that's a wonderful, wonderful book. And it really, I had never thought about it myself, about not so much about what has been done to Africa, because I did grow up, you know, being very aware of the legacy of colonialism. But I never thought about rubber and how what happened in this, that particular storyline was inspired by what happened in the Congo. how this desire for rubber, it led to this devastation that destroyed thousands upon thousands of lives. So that was an attempt to put the story in a historical context to show not just what this movement was like, but what other struggles had that happened to this village because of colonialism and because of neocolonialism and because of, I mean, what is happening in the novel is a case of corporate imperialism, but it didn't just start with the oil, right? Even before the oil, this African village had been through a lot because there was demand for their resources in Europe and America, and they had to, the villagers had to pay a price for that. So it is also an attempt to see the cost of globalization and how it affects individuals in the community who are not powerful enough to stand up against the forces of globalization.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned King Leopold's ghost. It's a great insight into those days of European colonization. It also reminds me that when I read a book like yours, I end up going down the rabbit hole, in what I would call the rabbit hole of enlightenment, finding other sources to help me better understand what you're getting at. I mean, what you've done with this book is incredible, because I think what you've really accomplished here is to put flesh and bones and heart and soul into the news stories that we hear. But when we hear the news stories, we really don't have the same ability to learn the impact on people as your book allows you to do. And the book I found that I thought was very interesting, in case our listeners are interested, is a book called The Looting Machine by Tom Burgess. And it won the Overseas Press Club Award winner in 2016. But it is the story of exploitation of Africa, one of the wealthiest continents in the world, but besieged by these countries, including the United States of America, that exploit it and take it apart. And that leads me to my next question, the restoration movement. You have in your book some help that comes, some aid that comes to the villagers who are trying to get this company to back off and if nothing else, give them some money for the damage they have done. Mm-hmm. It's called the Restoration Movement. I didn't get the impression reading your novel that it was the most effective force in this drama between locals and the all-powerful corporation. But I want you to tell the story without giving, of course, the ending away. We're not going to do that. We never do that on Reader's Corner. But please, Restoration Movement.
Well, I mean, my writing, Bob, is very much about questions, right? I mean, as a novelist, I'm driven by questions. What is the best way to do this? How do we help people in a small community who are trying to fight a powerful corporation? So the Restoration Movement is an NGO. It's a nonprofit in America that they help marginalized communities around the world. And so when they hear about what this American oil company is doing in this African village, they go there to help. But to your point, you know, it is very complicated, because the fight for justice is not a straight line, right? It is complex, because human beings are complex. And that is what drives me as a writer, to look at this human complexity and to look at how it could stand in the way of really making progress. And the restoration movement is an example of that, because yes, there are many, many do-gooders who go all over the world, to Africa, to South America, to Asia, to help, you know, to solve the social and political issues there. But maybe there's a lot more needed than that. I don't know. I don't have answers. And I like to say that I don't have answers, because I really don't. And that is why I write novels. That is why I write a story like this. I don't think you're going to read my novel and think, oh, now Mbolongwe has the answers. Like you said, you know, you finish reading it and you wonder, you ask yourself questions. And that's what I do as well. I don't have answers. I try to put in my questions in the form of stories.
I'm Bob Custer here at Reader's Corner. Today I'm speaking with Mbolo Mbwe, author of the new novel, How Beautiful We Were. The book follows a fearless young woman from a small African village as she starts a revolution against an American oil company. So you also have a characterization of a lawsuit filed by the Kasawa community using the Alien Tort Statute act. And I thought that was really interesting. I mean, you're right up with the times, Imbola, because the fact is that that was the statute that Ken Sarawiwa used in Nigeria when he brought an action. And actually, it was his son, I think, that brought the lawsuit. But please tell us how you fit that in. You managed to talk about the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act too, which I'm sure most Americans don't even know what that act is. But that's a very important check on these corporations who go abroad and do the kind of damage that your book demonstrates.
Right. Yeah. No. Thank you for noticing that. And it goes back to the point about the novel being very heavily researched, right? I did, you know, for full disclosure, I did, you know, speak to lawyers. And I said, you know, from a legal perspective, I'd like to have your advice on what is the best way to go around this. And you know, I spoke to a few lawyers and they all had ideas, but I thought that this is what they would do. And also because that has been used, like you said, those laws are made to stop American companies from going somewhere and devastating communities. It doesn't mean that it's easy to win a lawsuit using them, but at least, you know, we can be grateful that there are laws on the book that tries to prevent an American oil company from just going and devastating a community. And so that is what the villagers try to use. And they use a couple of different laws on the book to try to make this oil company to stop doing what they're doing. But in real life, it doesn't exactly go so easily. In real life, you know, in the novel and in real life, the oil companies have the best lawyers, so they know how to get around all of those things.
Well, in Tula's attempt to force the government to hold an election, she creates a political party, the United Democratic Party, but that party has a tough time taking root in the western part of Kasawa. And it appears as though the people are afraid of the government. And I think you also mention in your novel through one of the actors, so to speak, you mentioned the fact that tribal cultures, and I don't know whether I should say get in the way or slow down, but help us understand how tribal cultures may make it difficult for reformers and revolutionaries, for that matter, to pull people together, because tribal cultures, I suppose, just by their very definition, pull people apart, huh?
Yes, yes. It's a very good point, Bob. And it is a major issue that I've noticed about humans, not only in Kosawa, but also in America, right? We are very tribalistic people. We might not have tribes in America the way we do in Africa, but we have, you know, we are divided where, you know, this is how we think and we don't like the way those other people think. And because this is my tribe and this is my person from my part of the world or my part of the country, I tend to align my beliefs with theirs. And that is what is going on in Kosawa as well. But it's funny, I was writing that at the time when I was thinking more about America than I was about Kosawa. Because again, this novel, while the village is set in Africa, while the village is in Africa, I was thinking a lot about the similar issues happening in America and this us versus them. And that was sort of the inspiration for what happened to Tula, because she has a great idea. She's a revolutionary, she's a visionary, but she can't get the people to come behind her because certain people just don't believe. She's also a woman, so she has a lot and lots of struggles with the fact that she's a woman, and some people just don't want to follow a woman. Maybe because other people, they don't think that she's one of them. Mm-hmm. They think she's from another part of the country. They think she's too different. They think her ideas are too Western. But tribalism, certainly, it has its benefits, right? This is the reason why, as humans, we continue to evolve, because we have identities and we stick to our tribes, and our tribes help us. But in other ways, tribalism has been very disadvantageous. And I grew up in a very tribalistic country. Cameroon is very, very tribalistic. And I could see as a child that dividing ourselves between us versus them was really not serving anyone.
So, Tula has a brother. Mm-hmm. He winds up in a very different place than his sister, the reformer, revolutionary, whatever you want to call her. Help us understand why you inserted her brother in this novel in a way that is far from where Tula's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, it's about choices also, Bob. I think that Tula made a choice to spend her life fighting for justice. She decided that she wanted to dedicate herself to preserving her village, because her village meant a lot to her, and it meant a lot to her that the children in her community were able to fight, to live comfortably the way she wasn't able to as a child. And then her brother also has to make his own choices. And that is part of what his story is about. His story is about deciding for himself, what kind of life do I want to live? Just because his sister decides to fight for justice, make that her life goal, doesn't mean that it has to be his life goal also. So he spends a lot of the novel discovering who he is and what he thinks the best philosophy for life is.
So then there's Austin. And again, we're not going to give anything away as far as the ending of this book, because our readers deserve the right to do that on their own. But I do want to ask you about Austin. He enters Tula's life first in Kosawa, and then she meets him in America as she is a student. Mm-hmm. He plays a very important role in the narrative because it seems to show, I think what you're trying to do here, and correct me if I'm wrong, is help us understand how difficult it is to step out of the ordinary and into the role of a revolutionary or a reformer. It sometimes causes you to leave people behind.
That's right. I mean, as a child growing up, this novel was very much inspired by my fascination with revolutionaries. So I grew up in Africa in the 90s, where revolutionaries were almost treated like rock stars. I mean, when we talked about the you know, somebody like Mandela, who came out of prison while I was a child, or when I came to America, I learned about Dr. King and I read about Gandhi and Malcolm X. Like, I was very fascinated by these people. What does it take to lead a movement? What does it take to try to change your town or your country and the world? And as I got older, I realized how much sacrifice is involved in it. And there's some people who just start off believing that they can do something and then they eventually give up. And Tula is not one of those. She really believes that she can really, really make a difference and change her country. But that was part of what I thought about during the process of this novel, the cost, the toll it takes on you to take a stand, not only on a big scale, right? We can think about the revolutionary, but on a small scale, somebody wants to change the world around them. What does that mean, and how much does it demand of them? And Tula and Austin, they are examples of people who have to decide for themselves what they're willing to risk in their quest for justice.
One of the things that I learned about your novel writing is that the first one, Behold the Dreamers, as I think I may have mentioned in the intro, has been optioned for a movie, and I saw George Clooney's name on it. Now, that's a pretty big deal. Has that gone anywhere? I know that a lot of novels are optioned for movies, and there's a great distance between the time the option occurs and the movie occurs.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure about that. I do know that it's been optioned, but I don't really know where anything stands with that right now as far as who is doing what where. I know it was optioned by a wonderful production company, not Josh Clooney's people. I think that was something that happened in the past. Right now it's with a wonderful production company and they love the book, but you know, the way Hollywood works is that it may or may not happen. I mean, sometimes books are optioned and nothing happens for 20 years, and sometimes they option and a movie comes out the next year, and in many, many cases, nothing ever happens. So I am just happy that at least somebody thinks that it might look good on screen, and it is. I have enjoyed talking to the Hollywood people.
Well, and How Beautiful We Were would also look very good on the screen, so you may not be finished with those folks from Hollywood. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
This has just been a delightful conversation, Imbolo. I can't say enough about your work. I know authors are very careful to hold close to their vest, as they say, their next novel, but are you working on something now? Or can you talk about something now?
Yeah, I'm certainly thinking about it. So, I don't know how long it would take me to get it together, but I'm definitely thinking about it also. But thank you so much, Bob. This was such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It's been a delight to have you on Reader's Corner. Again, the novel is How Beautiful We Were by Imbolo Mbwe. Thank you so much for joining us, Imbolo.
Thank you, Bob.
Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio News. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones, with production by Joel Wayne. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.